According to conventional wisdom, the Supreme Court decides what is constitutional and what is not. And yet recently, the New American published a cover story entitled, "The U.S. Supreme Court, the Enemy of the Constitution." Let's take a look. This is Beyond the Cover with your host, Gary Benoit, and today we're delighted to have with us Steve Bias, who is professor of history at Randall University in Moore, Oklahoma, and also the author of the book, History's Greatest Libels, and of course, a longtime writer for the New American Magazine. Steve, we're glad to have you with us today.
Well, it's a real honor to be on with you today, Gary.
Now, Steve, you wrote the cover story for the latest issue of the New American Magazine entitled, "The U.S. Supreme Court, the Enemy of the Constitution." Why are you referring to the Supreme Court as an enemy of the Constitution?
Well, of course, the framers set up the Supreme Court of the United States, and it could not be an enemy of the Constitution if it was operating as the framers intended the Supreme Court to operate. What the Supreme Court in recent years has done is they have decided that they are going to implement a particular agenda. And so instead of fulfilling their actual role that the framers intended for them to fulfill, which is to hear cases arising under the Constitution and make decisions on those cases, they have decided that they can change the Constitution to fit whatever they feel like it ought to be. And anybody that is trying to usurp the Constitution, I would say, is an enemy of that Constitution.
But isn't the Supreme Court, at least according to conventional wisdom, that is supposed to decide what is constitutional to begin with? So the Supreme Court says such and such is constitutional. That doesn't necessarily make it constitutional.
Well, the all people in the federal government, they do take an oath to the United States Constitution, and that would include members of the Supreme Court. And so obviously what's going to happen is if a case comes before them, what they should do is apply the Constitution to that case. And if the law, for example, conflicts with the Constitution, then they would have to go with the Constitution. The problem is that that's not what they're doing in most cases anymore. They're sitting there and deciding, well, what should the law be instead of what is the law? It's sort of like if a football official decided, well, this shouldn't be the rule. I'm going to just change it. Well, that's not his job. His job is to apply the rules of the game of football. A Supreme Court judge is supposed to apply the Constitution to the case before him or her, as it is today. Now, obviously, they're going to have differences of opinion and all that sort of thing. But many of the judges have openly said that they can just apply the Constitution to evolving standards. Well, who are they to decide what the evolving standards are? They're not.
Right.
That's not their role.
Well, of course, if it evolves, you really don't have a fixed Constitution to begin with, do you?
Absolutely. And that's why Justice Scalia made a comment about that. He said, about people call it a living constitution. He said, I'd rather stick with my dead one, you know, that instead.
Can you cite any examples of a Supreme Court ruling that you would say is unconstitutional?
Well, one thing that comes to mind is the, you remember the case where the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the 14th Amendment said that all 50 states had to allow same-sex marriages.
Right.
Well, nobody can rationally think that the people who wrote the 14th Amendment back in the 1860s wrote it with that in mind or anything like that. The 14th Amendment was written to ensure that the rights of the Constitution would be afforded to all people, to the former slaves. It was not intended to overturn the laws of the 50 states and in that type of situation. And so that's clearly unconstitutional.
Right.
And then, of course, usurping the states and the realm of abortion law, which they did with Roe v. Wade in 1973. That's another example. Justice Byron White said it was an exercise of raw judicial power rather than a ruling on the Constitution.
Well, of course, in that 1973 ruling, the justices claimed that they found a right to privacy in the Constitution justifying abortion, or a right to abortion, that they said was in the penumbra of the Constitution. Is there any such thing?
Well, I don't think that there is any such thing. I think one of the problems that we have is that this is what is kind of just said today, and a lot of people who are, even people who are pretty conservative, will fall for this, that the Supreme Court rulings are the law of the land. And they cite the case of Marbury versus Madison. And in that case, they say, well, the Supreme Court established the power of judicial review. And that I've read the Supreme Court decision, Marbury versus Madison, and it said no such thing. Chief Justice Marshall said that they had a duty to review acts of Congress and cases that were before them. He didn't use the word power of judicial review. He just said the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. And it was not his opinion that was important. It was what the Constitution said. They don't make the law. The Constitution is very clear that Congress makes federal law. The president's job is to see that that law is carried out, and the role of the Supreme, all federal courts, all courts, is to apply the law to a case that is before them. It's only the law of the case. They don't make the law of the land. They make the law of the case between the two the litigants that are in the courtroom. That's all they do. You know, that's not their job to decide, you know, change. They weren't given the power to amend the Constitution to their liking, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. But when the Supreme Court oversteps its proper authority and does things it should not do, does things that are unconstitutional, what redress is there? Let's take, for example, Roe versus Wade. That created the so-called right to an abortion. What can be done to overturn an unconstitutional decision by Congress or by the states?
Yeah, well, we're hopeful, I think, that the Supreme Court is going to reverse that ruling here with the Mississippi law. But beyond that, there's a couple of things. One, if you'll look at the Constitution, Article 3, Section 2, mm-hmm. of the Constitution. One of the things that was written into the Constitution as far as principles was the idea of checks and balances. And one check on the power of the courts, if they get out of line, was written right into the Constitution there in Article 3, Section 2, that Congress can limit the appellate jurisdiction of the federal courts. And so that would be one thing that could be done. Now, the problem is we don't have a very good Congress. Gary, you might agree with that for
yes.
the most part. And so one solution that would kind of go along with that is the American people are responsible. They need to elect better people to Congress. That is a huge solution right there. The other thing is that short of that, the states, they have their role. And their job is to... they're supposed to follow the Constitution too, and if the federal government and the courts are not following the Constitution, they should just simply refuse to go along with it. you know, and follow that higher law of the Constitution. And some have applied the word nullification to that. And that would work, you know, like things like, you know, the federal government needs the cooperation of the states in most cases to try to enforce a lot of these laws. And Madison talked about the states interposing between their citizens and the federal government if it goes beyond the Constitution. So those are things that nothing's perfect, and nothing's going to solve every problem. There's no silver bullet, so to speak, here. But at the same time, there are things that we can do to limit this problem.
Do you know why it is, Steve, that states aren't doing that? I know there are a lot of people in this country who are pro-life. In fact, I would think more people than the news media is willing to acknowledge. And over the years, they have, asked for a constitutional convention, which I think suggests, at least implicitly, that the problem is the Constitution, and therefore the Constitution needs to be changed. But you mentioned this power of nullification, though. State legislators, obviously, they take an oath to the Constitution, and it seems like taking that oath that when the federal government, or in this case, the U.S. Supreme Court, asks them to do something unconstitutional, they would declare it null and void within their state borders. Why don't we see states doing that? Why don't we see the power of nullification employed?
Well, part of it, I think, is ignorance of our federal system, mm-hmm. how it's supposed to work. I think there's a lot of that. Part of it is a concern that the federal government would cut off, quote, federal money.
Right.
And I've long contended that one of the biggest problems that we had was the 16th Amendment, which allowed Congress to enact an income tax, gave Congress this pool of money that they can dole out to the states. And once you get somebody hooked, you know, on some money, it's very difficult for the states to rebel against some federal edict then, because like you remember the 55 mile an hour speed limit that they had several years ago, Congress passed that and all 50 states went along with it because they were concerned they would have their federal highway money cut off. And I think that's a huge thing. I think I've read all kinds of statistics that of a state's budget, you know, it's over a third of the state's budget comes from the federal government. And they're concerned that they'd be thrown out of office, you know, if they rejected those federal funds, probably.
Final question, Steve. What can be done to change that? What can the American people do? You know, let's say the average person who is pro-life, or the average person who recognizes that that the federal government has overstepped its proper authority. What can individual Americans do to get the government back on track?
Well, one is you want to elect better people to Congress. Now, in order to elect better people to Congress, you're going to have to educate your fellow citizens. And, you know, I think it's well and good to contact your congressman. I think that's a good thing to do. However, if you don't have enough people contacting that congressman, they're not going to change. What we have to do is create a situation in which a person running for Congress on the grounds of following the Constitution on things you're talking about there, that they can get elected, that the general public unfortunately has been so miseducated and indoctrinated into these ideas that we have to change that. And of course, you know, the John Birch Society, for example, does a really good job at educating and people to what the framers intended for the Constitution. And there are other organizations, but of course the JBS is I think is the best at that. But that's what any chance you have an opportunity as a private citizen to explain these things to other citizens, because most people don't understand. You know, they don't know, they don't think about this. And so every citizen has a duty to save what we've got in this country, the Constitution of the United States.
Right. And of course, you were talking about getting a better Congress, but you could apply those same principles to getting a better state legislature as well.
Absolutely. And of course, you educate those, educate your fellow citizens and put pressure on the legislators, get better legislators in there who will stand up to the federal government.
Well, thank you,
And
Steve. We really appreciate having you on today. And for people watching who would like to see Steve's article on the U.S. Supreme Court, The Enemy of the Constitution, it's in the January 17, 2022 issue of the New American. And to order your copy, just click on the link in the description to this video. Thank you very much.
all right, well, thank you for having me today.
Thank you, Steve.